Good evening and welcome to Podcast 107. I am Peter.
And I am Joey.
And Joey, did you enjoy your nap?
Yes.
This evening?
Yeah.
We had to have a pause before we could actually begin tonight because Joey felt like he needed a nap.
I didn't want to tune in the kind of drug and fever addled nonsense that passed for a podcast last week.
Well, seemed all right.
You didn't notice a difference?
No more different than usual. But then again, I have a low opinion of you, so...
That's fair.
Yeah.
No. You do know me quite well.
You seem to be better now. Yeah, I mean, aside right. from the lack of sleep, which is, in my book, typical of when you show up here. But health-wise, you look better, for sure.
I'm feeling a lot better.
Oh, that's good. All of those well wishes that we sent out from the internet came and attacked you. Okay, so how was your week otherwise?
Pretty miserable. Today is the first day that I'm really starting to feel better. So it was health-wise, it was just fighting it all week and continue to be frustrated in my career. So
yeah, that does sound pretty bad.
That life of crime just doesn't seem to be getting off the ground the way I expected.
Yeah, that does sound bad. But it's not as bad as what I think I had, which
was a date.
I had to go watch the Harry Potter movie. No, that's not true. I did have a bad week in that I massively tore my hamstring.
Yeah, that is a pretty sweet bruise you got going on the back of your leg, by the way.
Yeah, when Joey showed up, I was like, hey, you want to see something cool? And I pulled up my shorts and showed him the pool of blood that seems to be congealing behind my knee. That wasn't fun.
Subcutaneous blood. Just you're not laying on the couch bleeding or anything.
Yes. Why won't you render first aid? I'm getting lightheaded. No, what really sucks is I can't play soccer now for, I'm guessing, at least a month. There's no way I'm going to be able to do this. I'm still limping after 5 days, so I know it's bad.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Nonetheless, we have had a week, and it is over, and it is time for podcasting. And so let us cast off the cares and toils and troubles of our past week and delve within the toils and cares and troubles of Babylon 5.
2259.
Let's see here. We'll begin with Facebook Find of the Week.
Yeah.
Oh, which, by the way, we had once again a lapse in judgment here in that the Facebook Find of the Week should have been awarded to the two people who won it, Bob and Cy, and unfortunately Joey didn't bother to send it out.
Come on, man.
He was expecting me to, and I'm like, no, that's it. You put the damn thing together. You send it out. Anyway, maybe in between us recording this, we can actually send off the email to you guys with your...
And by that, you mean I can send
prize.
Off the email.
Well, you're the one with the computer sitting in front of you. I've got a hurt knee.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I see. You're going to milk that thing for all it's worth, aren't you?
Oh, that would be interesting to milk my knee and see what sort of juices and blood could flow out of
that.
Yeah,
we could certainly make that bruise diminish in size.
All right. Okay, so really, Facebook Find of the Week. What are you thinking?
I am thinking...
We had a bunch of submissions.
Yeah, we did. We had a clip of the real Ghostbusters. We had a thing about how politics in the UK is mimicking an episode of The West Wing, or the general tone of The West Wing, I suppose.
All right, so you're gonna run through them all for us right now.
Those
were
the
doing?
Two that I narrowed it down to.
Okay,
when I was considering the final winner, and I think I'm gonna have to give it to the real Ghostbusters clip. That thing was hilarious. I never saw that cartoon.
Just gonna go.
It explains so much about why those scripts were allowed to air. Good for them that they have that kind of relationship. Unfortunate for Babylon 5. I believe that this week is actually the last Larry DiTellio script.
Yay! Oh, that's wonderful. All right, so who won? Who had submitted that?
That was Listener Moneybags.
Listener Moneybags. Oh, so he's going to be awarded the Facebook Find of the Week as well. He won't get it until Monday, though.
Okay.
We're not going to send it to him until Monday. But the other two, they've earned it, you know, several weeks ago. So it's a high time we get that sent off.
It's long overdue.
Okay, Joey's Culture Corner then.
Okay, I just finished listening to... I think I told everybody that asked me, what are you listening to? That sounds like a weird book. I think I said that it was an 80-hour audiobook. It wasn't really an 80-hour audiobook, but it was really long. It was called The City at the End of Time by Greg Bear. And I think I've talked before on the podcast about a book called Anathem by Neal Stephenson. And it's almost like Greg Bear and Neal Stephenson took the same idea and each wrote their own take on it, which is, it's kind of the story of creation, or, you know, the meta story about the whole entire universe. How did the universe come to be? How did we all kind of get here, kind of thing? It's very, very bizarre. I think Neal Stephenson's take on it was much more interesting. Not to say that this was a bad book, it's just the whole entire book, I kept waiting for all the things that he set up to pay off. And a lot of them just kind of went nowhere. It was just, oh, well, you know, there was this one really interesting guy at the beginning of the story, and we never circled back and found out what happened to him. That was it. He was just interesting there at the beginning. That was the point.
So it's like the Babylon 5 of books about creation?
Yeah.
Because I'm going to tell you, I'm a little frustrated with this week's episodes.
Really?
Because of some things that happened with characters I thought... Seriously, this is like we've built, and oh, okay, crap just happened.
Wow!
But I'm jumping a little too far ahead. That was a cheap shot on my part. So continue on with our creation story.
The general concept is that there are people living in what I believe is supposed to be our time right now, who are duplicates or are somehow quantum entangled with versions of themselves that exist trillions of years in the future, when humanity no longer even resembles anything like it is today. We are, he talks about them being constructs that are tied together just by pure will, that there's no physical matter to them anymore, and things like that. I mean, just really kind of crazy stuff. So that there's this quantum entanglement process that's going on, and chaos has been... The forces of chaos have been consuming our timeline backwards from trillions of years in the future. They've consumed all of the past up to a 2000-ish or, you know, 1990s-ish period. And then everything just kind of collapses together at that point, and the two quantum entangled beings have to come together to restart the engine of creation after chaos has completely consumed everything. I think that's about all I can really say about it, in case somebody does want to read it, and I don't want to completely destroy things for
them. All right, this doesn't sound appealing at all. So let me ask you this. What's the big idea of this story? What's supposed to be the sell-off point, the culminating idea that...
What created the Big Bang? We did.
Okay. Okay, well, I was hoping that might save something, but not for me anyway.
Ultimately, the idea, I think, is that the universe and matter never were created and never will be destroyed. They just kind of recycle themselves over and over again.
All right, so I guess that's good.
Yeah, I suppose.
I don't feel like this should get a thumb up from you.
This is going to get a thumb sideways. It's neither a thumb up nor a thumb down. There were aspects of it that are interesting. And Greg Barrett is really good with language. I like what he does with language. He's a very interesting guy. He is a... I want to say that his day job, if you will, is as an astrophysicist. And so what he does is he takes these really abstract concepts in physics and time and things like that, just really bizarre, way out there theories, and uses them to write a science fiction story that's trying to educate the reader. Okay, here's what this principle really is all about. If you wanted to understand string theory, he's got a story called Eon that is an attempt to explain to the average layperson how string theory works.
Sounds like the guy's trying to be C.S. Lewis, bringing Christianity to his children through the story of the Chronicles of Narnia.
I was going to go with more Dr. Seuss than C.S. Lewis.
I like yours better. That seems funny. Like somehow the Lorax is going to come along with his buddy Horton.
The Lorax and Horton explain string theory.
Oh man.
I don't mean to sound mean. I actually do like what the guy's trying to do. In this one, I just don't feel like his writing talent in the science fiction aspect was up to the task of making this a really compelling story.
So do you think he's a good writer in general?
Yes, he has written some science fiction that is incredibly entertaining. I mentioned Eon. I read that book and didn't even really notice that he was trying to teach something because the characters were interesting and the story was plot-driven. But in this case, it just seemed like there wasn't any there. It was just trying to explain the idea, and it was such an abstract or abstruse concept that it got in the way of the story.
So there wasn't any there.
Right.
Well, I'm lost. But you gave it a thumb sideways, which clearly isn't your highest rating.
I'm neutral on this one. I think there are people who probably will read it and be entertained. I was disappointed.
It's so-so. Okay, well, we'll leave it at that. Okay. And those people who want to enjoy or imbibe themselves upon such material can do so at their leisure. We'll move into episodes for this week.
Actually, I have one other thing I wanted to share.
What are we introducing a new segment?
No.
All right.
No,
I can't keep up with another segment. That's too much.
It's just not particularly episode related, but it is something from the J. Michael Straczynski script book that I wanted to share. I thought the readers,
your new Bible,
might find it.
Yeah. Okay. Please.
Well, it's
share.
Volume 5 of my new Bible. He says, before you know the value of something, you first have to understand what it is and what it means. My childhood was spent on the run, moving with my family from town to town, state to state, sometimes in search of opportunities, but mostly fleeing creditors. About every 6 months, I'd come home from school, pack up hurriedly, sometimes in the middle of the night, then a U-Haul would appear and we'd be off, heading from New Jersey to California or Texas or Illinois. From Patterson to Napa, Newark, Los Angeles, San Diego, Kankakee, Richardson, all aboard for the Straczynski Express. There were two significant side effects to this. The first is that I was always the new kid, always on my own and constantly caught in the switches between what had been taught in the last school and what was being taught in the new school, alternately unable or unwilling to make friends because there was no point in it. The Straczynski Express would leave regardless. Having friends just made the parting more difficult. He talks about realizing that he was smarter than a lot of the kids in a lot of the schools he was going to, but that if he performed as well as he could, he'd get picked on. And so he just became this C student. He figured out a way to just be the middle of the road C student, not draw attention to himself in any school he moved into. He skated too close to the line. He says, I skated too close to the line and ended up failing a class when illness prevented me from taking two critical tests. To make up the difference, I was dumped into summer school, which is where the kids with special needs went, meaning troublemakers and the academically challenged. In order to determine how badly each new group would fall within the bell curve, the administrators made everyone take IQ tests. Since I was curious to know where I stood, and since I would never return to this school anyway, when the IQ test landed on my desk, I decided to go for it. The next day, I was summoned to the vice principal's office, where they accused me of cheating. The score was impossibly high for a kid who, by every definition you care to apply, could only be classified as a dead-ender. When I insisted I hadn't cheated, they pulled out a different IQ test and demanded I take it on the spot while they watched. I scored even higher. At 13, I had the reading and comprehension skills of a university graduate and an IQ that was significantly into the genius category. The vice principal sat at his desk staring at me with astonishment. He asked me how and why I'd ended up in this place. To his first question, I gave him the answer noted earlier. I got tired of being beat up all the time. The answer to how was even simpler. Going year after year without friends in different houses, schools, and cities meant there was no continuity to my life. So I created it in my own way via the public library. I discovered that I could put a book back onto a library shelf at page 93 in Matawan, New Jersey, move to Inglewood, California, go to the local library, pull down the same book, and start reading again at page 94. Books were my constant companions, my source of continuity. Because books were my lifeline, I was a prisoner to whatever the local library had in stock. Coming from a lower-class, blue-collar family meant I had very little money. Buying actual books was out of the question. Unfortunately, on more than one occasion, I found myself in small, provincially-minded schools where science fiction was considered a bastard and unworthy genre, so that there was nothing in the school library and rarely much better at the local public library. Thus did I embark on probably the weirdest life of crime ever recorded. Being smart for a kid, I was able to go from one corner store to the next, to markets and liquor stores, find out which had the best selection of science fiction books in the spinner racks, locate the mirrors, and instantly size up the blind spots. I would then go in, grab three or four paperbacks, and get out. I'd read them at night beneath the covers because I certainly couldn't explain how I had gotten them. I'd open the books just enough to read them without cracking the spines, and when I was done, put them under my heaviest textbooks to flatten them into near-mint condition. Then I'd return to the same source in which I'd taken them, slip into the blind spot, and put them back on the spinner racks.
Seems a poor idea. Why couldn't he at least try and sell them back and get store credit? Build some wealth.
Because at the end of the day, I was an honest kid.
Oh.
Desperate and in need of new dreams, yeah, but still honest. I was always more worried about being caught with books in my jacket while going into the store rather than coming out, because I knew they would never believe me if I told them I was trying to put them back. Each time I embarked on such an incursion, I would have scant seconds to determine which book to grab. I wanted to make sure that if I went to the big house, it was for a good book, not a crappy one. The question was how to tell them the difference in the split second I had to make a grab. This was before the internet, remember? I had no fellow science fiction fans to ask for suggestions, and I was still learning who was who. Finally, I figured out one sure sign that if I saw it on a book, meant it would be worth risking going to jail. It was any book with the words Hugo Winner on it. These were the books by the elite, the immortals, the gods of science fiction whose brains encompassed whole galaxies. Books that kept me sane on the long road, that taught me language and gave me a love of storytelling. Books that were worth the risk of getting busted just so I could read them alone at night in my bedroom before returning them the next day. Hugo Winner. That must be amazing, I thought in the dark after the lights were out, to win a Hugo, to know your stories will endure, to be validated. I couldn't even begin to wrap my brain around the idea of what that must be like. And then he proceeds to tell the story how The Coming of Shadows won a Hugo Award. And the award presentation and everything, and how he's never been able to tell anyone all these years the whole long story of why that meant so much to him. And it's because of this story from his childhood.
Hmm.
I just thought that was a very interesting aside. It doesn't really fit into any episode, but I wanted to share it.
Feels like it might fit in with The Coming of Shadows.
Well, unfortunately, I hadn't read that until technically The Fall of Night is the episode that he talks about that in.
I see. Okay, well, I think you should have made that your culture corner. It's a lot more enjoyable than that meandering a trip that we took with that weird guy. But nonetheless, I think we all just enjoyed that nice little story from J. Michael Straczynski's life.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, now can we go into episodes?
Now we can go into
episodes. All right, we will be covering episodes 17 through 20 of Babylon 5 Season 2, and we'll start off with episode 17, Knives.
Sheridan begins hallucinating after a trip to the Babylon Triangle, and Londo must kill one of his oldest friends to protect the family's honor.
Such a dumb concept. The Babylon Triangle.
Yeah. Well, it was some Garibaldi came up with it, so.
It's this place that we can't scan, essentially, right?
Right, yeah.
Why didn't they mention it in the last episode where they were scanning the ship?
That's a good question.
You know?
Yeah.
Or send the guy, hey, look, we know you're on the run. Go hide out in this area right here.
Where nobody can scan.
So dumb. So we have some weird things. Babylon 5 Triangle. We've got a baseball field.
Yeah, apparently, with you know, all the space constraints that they have...
We got room.
The space station.
We got room.
We got room for a baseball field.
Yeah, I guess I can... It kind of makes sense. I mean, if they have that... the Muay Thai, place where you, you know, fight all the time. I guess why not a baseball field? It'll help to generate oxygen, maybe, from the grass.
All right.
Maybe. I guess.
I never got baseball. I don't get it.
Neither do I.
See the fascination?
Let's not talk about it.
Right.
And then we've got Veer and Londo arguing over opera.
Or Centauri opera, though. I enjoyed that scene. You didn't like that?
No.
I liked it. I liked how, like, as they were standing there singing it in the hallway, they actually swelled the music up. And we could hear Narn operatic music.
No. Oh. No. I don't know. It seems like, is that the only music that they have? And what's music really like on Earth nowadays? Or in there in 2259? What has it become? And what has it evolved into?
Nothing good. It's got lots of synthesizers in it, apparently. Yeah,
no, that's just the 90s getting in the way. All right, so he's interrupted by someone who's trying to kill him, which turns out to be his old friend, Ursa, who is played by an actor that I really like.
Because of his role in SG-1, right?
Yeah, that's one of the places I really like him. He's been in other stuff, though. Okay. He's been in lots of other things.
I feel like
he may have been in West Wing at some point, too.
He might have been.
I think he played a general or something.
I recognize him. I was like, oh, that's that one guy. It's like the...
He plays Sam's father in Babylon 5.
He becomes one of the good Goa'uld, right?
Well, the way to ruin that for everybody else. Jeez, man.
Isn't that like season one?
No, that's not season one.
Oh, okay.
No, that's like, I feel much later. Like maybe season four.
How many seasons did we watch?
We didn't really watch any.
We started it.
I showed you a couple of episodes, and you kind of went on your own from that point.
So how have I seen that episode? Like, I totally knew who that guy was and everything.
I don't know.
Huh.
Maybe I mentioned it when I saw him in the West Wing.
Maybe. No. I remember watching that episode. But
okay, so I like the actor. I do not care for his performance in this.
Okay.
It seemed like he went overboard with the Pasoleate. It was like there was an audible groan, you know, of ecstasy each time he said it. It was weird for me. It just seemed like he went a little overboard with that, and it seemed like someone needed to rein him in. But as we've mentioned, this is a Dottilio episode, so, you know, maybe, you know, whoever the Dottilio
director
is was just sort of like, yeah, oh yeah, this is great, let's do this. I don't know, I made that up. Anyway, they sit around, they reminisce about the old days, and Ursa comes to point out, okay, you know, I'm about to be shamed by, the people there. Londo, you've got to help me. Londo tries to make it right. Lord Rifa says, what? No, I can't do that. He's totally going against our cause. And come to find out, you know, when Ursa finds out what Londo has been, you know, who he's been dealing with, he, you know, challenges him to a duel, which Londo ends up killing him, but it was all part of Ursa's plan. Because Ursa wanted to die in a manner that would protect the rest of his family.
Yeah, so I just want to be clear about this. When you kill me for the good of humanity, you are required to take on the burden of providing for my family at that point. So just weigh that in your mind against the cost of letting me continue to live.
Let's be clear. It's not going to be an issue because when I kill you for the good of humanity, the rest of humanity will take up the charge to care for your family. Say, oh, these poor people, they had to suffer so much under the iron fist of the Smith. That it's not going to be an issue. I'm not concerned about it.
All right. I just want it to be, you know, on the record that it's your responsibility once you've killed me to make sure they're taken care of.
All right, so that's the, I guess, is supposed to be the main plot. My question is, they duel. Is dueling allowed on Babylon 5?
Apparently.
It just seems odd that they go to great lengths to break up every fight that's going to happen, but as soon as a duel, Like, all right, this is dual. This is honorable. This is okay. Wouldn't someone be charged with murder at some point?
I don't know. I don't know how that works, actually. That's a good question.
I guess, you know, if it truly is a proper, I guess I use that term loosely, proper duel, then both parties would have agreed to this end.
Right. That's what I'm saying. If you...
But not every duel, like the person, you know, not both parties in every duel was like, okay, yeah, let's do this. Some, you know, might have, you know, been forced into it. But it's killing. It's a killing. You know, I guess his ambassadorial status is going to cover him.
Yeah.
But still, a duel is... You're murdering someone. You're killing someone.
You're killing someone. I don't know if you're murdering someone.
Well, it feels like there was, malice aforethought. You know, I was intending on killing him, so this is premeditated. I planned this out.
Yeah.
It just feels like this is murder.
That's a good question. Maybe one of our lawyer listeners can tell us the legal status of dueling here in the United States right now.
I feel like Jim needs to step up here.
Okay.
And explain. All right, so that's the main plot. The other plot is that Sheridan gets attacked by some dead guy and is now hallucinating. And we come to find out that there is some sort of entity living in him, inside him, that's been trying to communicate with him. And so the hallucinations is the form of communication that it's having. And so it manages to get Sheridan to fly out to Sector 14, and then it leaves his body into some weird rift, and we never hear from it again.
Right.
I get all that?
I think you summed it up pretty well there.
Okay, well, that was not bad. Joey, anything else you want to talk about for this episode? Because, I mean, we hit the major spots for me, and I don't really have anything more to talk about.
There's just one thing. In the Asked and Answered books, J. Michael Straczynski pointed out, actually, the chronological order was supposed to be Knives and then In the Shadow of Zahadum. Mm-hmm. In Knives, you get the reminder about Anna. He hallucinates of the Icarus exploding.
Sure.
And then in Zahadum, you were supposed to get the payoff. That was how they originally intended to be aired, but there was so much CGI and rotoscope work and creature animation involved in Knives that it got flopped to second in that order. So while it works, the best way was the way it was intended.
I don't think there was going to be a best way on that. I really don't.
Okay.
Anything else?
Nope, that's it.
Listener comments?
Yep.
Okay, we shall go to listener Moneybags first. He says, hey guys, TV Torrents was a success, and I'm back in business. I took your advice and skipped watching the first two episodes.
I saw you snuck that in the email, by the way.
I'm not wrong.
Okay.
I took up the task that you were supposed to be doing.
You and I just differ on what can be skipped.
There's nothing of value in this episode in the major arc of this story.
Okay.
Nothing.
I understand your point of view.
Yes.
I already understood it. I don't need you to explain it further.
Yeah, well, you're wrong. Anyway, he continues on. He has a little bit to say. A Londo episode, always a good thing, but I don't remember this one being all that great. Or I should say, I don't remember anything about it other than the basic story. As far as the alien parasite plot goes, I don't even remember that story.
Yeah, you're okay to forget that one.
If I wanted alien parasite plots, I would watch Stargate, which seems to feature one every time I channel surf by it.
Interesting, because, you know, we have the tie to Stargate through the actor.
Yeah.
I wonder if there's some kind of viral infection thing going on there.
Jeez. Okay. Next person is listener Bob. He says, hi, guys. I hope all is well. We had a good little party, although one of the baby birthday boys... hurled himself off a chair face first on the concrete. That would be my little boy.
Of course.
He is fine now, though it may be a while till we leave him with one of our nephews for a while. So, seems like that nephew...
maybe helped him on his way down or something.
Yeah, or wasn't paying enough attention. On another note, I hope you enjoy SpongeBob's first solitary, non-controlled email. She's going to have her own email. I can say, watching her write, it seems like a masterpiece.
He's trying to undo some of the damage he did there. I know backpedaling when I hear it.
He continues, so your email tells us to skip the first two episodes this week, but it would be rude not to say a few words, because I'm sure that in some way, Larry DiTilio hoped that his episode would relate to the greater story arc. Or maybe not. And you will be pleased to know that I did not fall asleep during any of these episodes.
Good.
Knives. Since when were the Centauri a noble race which used armed combat to resolve situations? You would feel that the Narn would be more suited to this sort of tradition. This episode was pure junk and filler. Like when you buy a sandwich and find out there is more bread than filling. It really didn't add much for me. Even the whole possession thing was irrelevant to me. I'd give a 2 for sci-fi and 2 for television. Wow. Yeah, I think that's a little low.
On the sci-fi side.
Okay, listener SpongeBob.
All right.
Hi, guys. Of all of Bob's bravado about not controlling my email is just that, bravado. He has told me I am not to write anything about season 4, but wow. Season 3 answers. Stay strong, my babby friends. It gets good. I have some top quality 80s song lined up to be prepared, so be prepared for Facebook Find of the Week competitors. All right. Congratulations must go to the two of you for dividing the Bob household. Just so we're clear, I had nothing to do with that. I'm not taking the fall.
You didn't put an edit in there.
Aubrey and Helen, Andalyn, would not look upon you favorably for wrecking our celestial love. Also, don't let Bob fool you about falling asleep. What he means is that now Babby 5 has gotten so good that the episodes he sleeps through, he goes back to watch again.
Seems like it'd be more efficient not to fall asleep in the first place. I'm just saying.
Who are you to judge?
Yeah, no, that's fair.
She continues, he's saying that I am mean for giving away secrets like that, but it wasn't me who suggested separate emails. Anyway, Knives. It was okay. More sad tales for Londo. More adventures going nowhere for the good captain. I give it a 5. All right, and now to JD. And he says, yeah, the first two of these episodes were pretty darn forgettable. In fact, I have to go look at the episode guide for the one after Londo killed his ex-friend in the honor duel. Sucks he had to run him through on the sword, but I'm not sure, I'm not even sure his friend's reasons for turning on him was even justified. Oh wait, I remember it now. The sick aliens that were contagious only to themselves. It really sucked that it was too late to save any of them before the cure was found. But meh, does the episode even have any lasting effects? He kind of ran that all in together, yep. So he's not going to have anything else to say until we get to the other ones.
I'd say it has lasting effects in the fact that we don't see the Markab anymore.
Yeah, that's a fair point. All right, the intern.
Okay.
Which, by the way, conspicuously still not here.
You know, I called him and he said, I just really don't have anything to say about these episodes.
That's all right. We still like having Aaron here.
Oh, I should have said that instead of, are you kidding me? You have nothing to say about these episodes? Did you actually watch them?
It's possible he might have a comment about that. Anyway, he says, I enjoy the Londo plot. The idea that someone would commit suicide to save family is cool, Plus, that fight is way better than the ultimate form of fighting between Riker and his father.
He's right.
It was a much better scene. Actually, what's sad is that was the sword fight was a better scene than what we saw in Infection.
Yeah.
And what Jakar did, the dancing fight scene,
the sneaky movement fight.
Yes. He says sci-fi 4 TV 5. That's comments.
Okay. Pete, your science fiction rating.
Okay. As far as science fiction goes, I actually think that it was pretty decent science fiction. Not great.
Okay.
I want to be clear on that. I'm only going to give this a 5, and if the majority of it is because of the whole possession of the captain and, you know, being rushed off to, you know, Sector 14, that just felt like just a sci-fi thing that you could put in any place, and it's still going to work.
Sure.
And I thought it was decent enough.
Okay. I'm giving it a 6. I think I enjoyed the Centauri culture stuff, the whole thing with the Proud Knives and the opera scene. I enjoyed them a little bit. I thought they added a little bit of character to the Centauri culture as a whole, and I think that brings it up an extra point for me.
Okay. Television, though, I wrote down a 4, but I can't defend it. I can't say I'm wrong, so I guess I'm just going to leave it at a 4.
Okay.
I guess. I mean, maybe it should be less.
I gave it a 3. I wanted to give it like up to a 5 even if it had been an entire episode about Londo and Urza.
Yeah, too many possibilities.
I wasn't as bothered by that as you were.
It just got so weird. It's an awkward name to say, and they made him say it so many times.
Okay, so I give it a 3 in the end.
Okay, what about the P5 rating?
The P5 rating is 7.21.